Movie Squad is sponsored by Luna Palace Cinemas, WA's premier independent cinemas, bringing the best film content and cinematic events to Perth. Come and enjoy the Luna Palace experience.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Murato.
This is the podcast version of your weekly edition of Movie Chat, broadcasting on RTRFM 92.1 Friday mornings, 7:30 a.m. with breakfast host Pam Boland. And on the Movie Squad podcast, we discuss new cinema releases and we move between, we do have a preference sometimes for horror, for thriller, but the darker side of the street in terms of the cinematic landscape. And I look at the remake of the Danish film Speak No Evil, produced by Blumhouse and starring James McAvoy.
But first, we go local. We take a look at Runt, the new film adapted by and from Craig Silvey's novel or kid's book of the same name, starring a whole host of familiar Aussie actors. So yeah, why don't we kick off by listening to a little bit of Runt.
The top two dogs in Australia earn an invitation to compete at a Crumpets Dog Show in London, which boasts a grand prize of $250,000.
That's it! Me and Runt are going to make it to the Crumpets Dog Show.
Sounds a bit stupid. Do not think you're in any position to be making judgment on what is stupid.
Max! 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 Please tell me someone filmed that!
Every Friday here on Brekkie, we take some time out for the cinematic arts. We look into the brains of the blockbuster babes. Those babes this morning, Simon Murato, Tristan Fidler. How are ya?
We're doing great.
Good.
I didn't do the good morning there. I don't have anything to throw you with. So I was like, maybe I'll do the how are you instead of good morning.
Ah.
Yeah, but it was good.
It was lovely to be asked. And
How
are you?
I'm great. Yeah, I'm feeling good. I've been watching a lot of terrible reality television. I always want to come on the Movie Squad and be like, I've watched one of the movies that's recommended. And sometimes I do that. But recently I've been completely transfixed by Queer Love, The Ultimatum. Have you heard of this show?
I've heard of The Ultimatum, which is a Netflix reality show where it's about, couples. They've got to are we getting married or not?
Yeah.
That's right.
It's crazy. It's bananas, this show. And I got completely absorbed by it. And I watched all the season in one go this week. And I just don't know how to exist now that it's not there. I can't keep watching it. But it's been a while for me away from reality TV, and I feel like that is also a universe away from the blockbuster babes and this universe. But how do we feel about reality TV in the Movie Squad?
Well, Simon, what do you think?
Look, I love cooking shows.
Okay,
love
cooking shows. Not reality TV.
No, that's what I'm saying. I like cooking shows. I like panel shows. I like things that have existed in reality.
Sure.
Reality TV. I'm not trying to be that guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
I'm not usually trying to be that guy, but this really got me.
Yeah.
I tell you, this is as close as I'll get. I got obsessed for a period of time with a TV show called Mystery Diners.
What?
And this was a TV show.
Come
about,
dine with me?
No, but it was cooking show adjacent, but it's that kind of thing where a restaurateur is like, I think my employees are stealing from me. And so they set up covert cameras and actors who pretend to cause a fuss in a restaurant. And it was all completely fake and terrible, but I watched a lot of it.
Wow. Okay. I've never heard of this show. So Mystery Diners as mystery shoppers. They were
exactly.
It was a bit of a sting.
Exactly. It's a sting. There's a back room where they have all the cameras set up and then they finally invite everyone back in and confront them.
Yeah. Wow. Look, not only have I been diving into that, but some really excellent Australian TV in the form of Dance Academy. Done a bit of a rewatch.
Yeah.
Hilarious. I've been watching some real comfort things. Now, Australian cinema and Australian television, all sorts of gorgeous stuff coming out of that. And there's some beautiful things out at the moment and coming out at the moment. We're talking about one of them this morning. Should we get into our first movie?
I have a very quick question first.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the Dance Academy series. Did anyone come from that? That it's how Kylie came from Neighbours. Rise, etc. Like, did anyone emerge from Dance Academy?
Not really. Like, I think they all sort of just went sideways into, like, Australian television, you
know? And that's
like,
a career.
Maybe Home and Away kind of sideways, gotcha. That kind of vibe. We are talking about an Australian movie up first, though. So yes. That was my desperate plea to try and link all of those back together.
And I wanted to learn more about Dance Academy. So we're all learning things today. But yes, absolutely. We're actually very fortunate. There are two WA-made films out in cinemas this fortnight. There's Kid Snow, which I think was briefly covered when it played the Revelation Film Festival. But this morning, we're talking about Runt, which is based on the Craig's...
Why did you say it like
that? Well, I don't know. How else do you say Runt?
Like
Tristan,
that.
How do you say Runt?
Runt, you know, like it's about a dog. It's got that dog cadence.
It's got that dog in him, yeah. No, I think you have to grunt it out more. It's like Runt. It is based on the Craig Sylvie children's book of the same name, much faded and beloved, only a couple of years old. And my understanding is that Craig Sylvie, who wrote Jasper Jones, of course, I think Honeybee was the name of the second book.
Yeah.
That he wrote the script to this at the same time as the manuscript for the book. Like, he kind of was envisioning it as something that would be turned into a movie, a family film. And it's directed by John Sheedy, who made H's for Happiness a few years ago. And definitely the aspiration here, or the kind of vibe of it, is a live-action cartoon.
Right.
You know, it really feels like it owes a lot to and is inspired by the Paddington movies, which are fantastic, and this similarly is a movie that is very heightened and has that kind of cartoon nature to it, and also a very colourful cast of characters. But set in the town of Ups and Downs, which is a very great name. It's a very
Ups
cute name.
Like a UPSON?
Ups and Downs.
Yeah, that's funny.
Which is very sweet. A town that's been drought-stricken for a number of years, and it focuses on a young girl whose name has escaped me briefly. It's Annie Shearer, of course, but she's played by Lily LaTorre. She lives on a farm with her parents. Her mum, played by Celeste Barber, is a terrible baker. And her dad, played by Jai Courtney, is a farmer, but has a secret love for horticulture. And she's got a brother, Max, who is played by Lily LaTorre's actual brother, Jack LaTorre. And he is a social media daredevil. Who, yes, Pam, I know exactly what you're thinking.
Is this Glenn Powell in The Twisters?
No. Yeah, it's the origin story for Glenn Powell in Twisters. No, he is the kind of kid whose livelihood will be stripped by the government's new age verification laws on social media. And I know you've wanted to spend most breakfast talking about this.
Yeah, look, I actually have. I have. I really want to talk about how kids aren't allowed on Instagram anymore. It's a disaster.
We've got to get a talk back going. We've got to spend the next 40 minutes talking about that. Regardless, Runt, this dog of mysterious breed, pops into their life, and Annie takes him in, and the dog is played by Squid, young female dog, and that's the kind of gender blind casting we love to see in TV and film. Runt comes into their life, and turns out that Runt is an especially agile and fast dog, very good at herding sheep. But even better at competing in, and I apologize, I'm not familiar with this world, but what appear to be dog show time trials.
Okay. Why did you? I thought you were going to say something like a bit offensive.
No, no, not at all.
Dog show time trials.
Well, there's probably, you know, the dog show elitists out there who are perhaps going, oh, no, it's actually called this thing.
Oh, okay.
Or it's actually a very respectable sport. I'm sure it is. But to me, it looks like dogs running very fast on an obstacle course, which is cool. so Runt is very good at this.
You're doing a great job at hiding your...
No, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Runt does a very good job of this, but there's just one problem. He can only do it when no one's watching.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
What a twist. Oh,
what
jinx.
A twist. Tristan, I know you haven't seen Runt yet, but what would you say your passion is for the sport of dog obstacle course? Very or extremely high?
You know, I haven't really given it much thought, but it is, I think, a popular subgenre on another social media platform, TikTok, because I do get shown some of these time trials.
I get them too sometimes, and I don't know what I'm doing to encourage that in my algorithm, and I'd like it to go away.
So you get to see, yeah, dogs have run, you know, they're just like zipping along, and you just can't believe that this is, you're bearing witness to it with the human eye. But, you know, I think that's always fun to, you know, put the spotlight on a subculture, or particularly something like that has that kind of community feel, and it provides another kind of challenge for a dog protagonist more than, decades ago, Lassie having to warn someone that the house is on fire or someone's fallen down a well. But I don't know. I've not actually seen Runt, so these things might occur as well in the heightened world of the film. But yeah, it's enough to kind of just follow a nice comedy premise of a dog who can be really fast, but as long as no one's watching.
Yeah, and I'll relieve the tension now. Runt doesn't have to rappel down a well or anything like that to rescue anyone. This is a film that, you know, the antagonist of the film is a guy called Fergus Fink, played by Matt Day. And Matt Day is actually really, really fun and good in this extremely hammy role. Like, but I mean that with love. You know, he's
Fergus
got this,
Fink.
Fergus Fink, he's got the massively kind of coiffed hair and he's like a very extravagant dog show guy.
Is there sequins?
Surely there were. You know, I feel like I could say that without without referring to sort of a lookbook or anything like that. And he wants to win, Runt is the underdog, etc.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, but look, that sounded condescending. But what I mean by Runt is actually a very lovely film, and I really enjoyed watching it. And I think, you know, to the point you're making, Tristan, you know, this isn't a film that is suddenly going to introduce a lot of peril into the world. It is meant to be a film. You know, it does skew that little bit younger, which I actually do appreciate. I've got a 4-year-old son, and do you know how hard it is to find like content that is suitable for a child who is voracious about wanting to watch things? Like currently we spend most of our time on YouTube watching Neon Genesis Evangelion comparison videos.
What?
In which you just
I don't know
what this is either. I don't know how he found it or how he's come to like it. We just watch videos that compare the sizes of different robots and things.
That's good.
Yes, so to be able to, you know, sit down and watch a movie like this is really enjoyable, and kids also, like, they've got a good nose. They know when kids' movies are bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like anything aimed at a kid is suddenly good.
Yeah.
You know, we watched the Disney film Wish. That was garbage. He hated it. I hated it. No one enjoyed watching that.
Yeah.
But Runt, even though it does skew younger, I think very friendly, very sweet, and very cartoonish. And WA made. So there's this additional pleasure of, you know, the town of ups and downs. You know, it was filmed in York.
Yeah,
so you've got that familiarity.
Oh, that's pretty cute.
They shot in Gidgee, and then the big climax of the film takes place in London at a big dog show.
Whoa.
But eagle-eye viewers will be able to say, that's ROC Arena. but I mean that in a fun way, in the same way that, you know, if you live in America and you know, cities like that, you're like, that's that building, that's this building.
Gotcha.
It is kind of novel to see that on the big screen in this context. So Runt, I believe it actually opens in WA next week.
Yeah, the 19th.
The 19th. Yeah, I think it times up with the different states and their school holidays. So I think it opens in Queensland this weekend. But look, really sweet film, a lot of really funny performances. Jai Courtney, I'm really jibing with him in this kind of mode.
Jiving with Jai.
Captain Boomerang, of course.
Hang on. Damn, I said jibing. With a B.
Jibing?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever heard that word. Jibing.
We'll have to Google that to
make
sure.
Cool.
But I definitely didn't mean jiving. But I'm jibing with Jai Courtney in this kind of fatherly kind of position. He's, you know, this sort of like softer Jai Courtney that we're getting.
Oh,
and Celeste Barber. And also Deborah Mailman is in this, as well she should be. Playing a mysterious dog trainer.
Whoa. I love Deborah Mailman.
Amazing.
I'll do anything that she does. I'd go to the opening of an envelope if she was the one opening it.
She's good here. And there's kind of like, you kind of get a feel like, oh, I know what this character's going to be. And she's actually, you know, she takes a bit of a softer tact with it, which I thought was interesting. So,
okay, cool.
Runt, lovely movie, really good family fun. And I'm not saying that just because it's locally made. I do think it is a really enjoyable family flick.
Yeah, Beautiful. Shout out to my neighbour, who I think is in the film as well, as a pie guy. So shout out to Michael McCall. So look, I haven't seen this film, but I think it also screened during Father's Day earlier.
Yeah,
I think it's one to take The kids and the family, the dads too.
Well, look, we've had a couple of people get in touch about some dance academy business. There's I thought I'd address it before we move into we're talking about something a bit scary next.
From the corrections department.
Yeah, from the corrections department. So the corrections department has got in touch to say that Tom Green, who plays Sammy in Dance Academy, the heartbreak of the nation when I came home from high school and had to watch that character die. Oh my god, I lost my nerve. Whoa. It was awful.
On Dance Academy.
Yeah, it was. It was a car accident.
Oh, okay.
It was out of nowhere. Yeah, okay. It was awful. And Tom Green, I've been corrected, left Dance Academy to do the Halo film, and also was in Of an Age, that queer coming of age film.
Great.
That's an Australian flick as well. And then Keenan Lonsdale, who played Ollie.
I know who that is.
Yeah, he was in Dance Academy and played Kid Flash in Flash and the Legends of Tomorrow, and also played in. Oh, that movie that I'm forgetting about, Love, Simon, was the love interest in Love, Simon.
They were also the villain in the Sabrina Carpenter film Work It,
which I have
been recommending for years.
What?
And now she's all famous, but Work It is a very fun Netflix dance movie.
Oh.
High school comedy kind of thing.
This is taking a sideways turn. I mean, Sabrina Carpenter for me is like Girl Meets World. That's where Sabrina Carpenter is. But anyway, if you feel...
We cover it all in Movie Squad.
We really do. Let's stop covering this. But if you do want to see the movie we're actually talking about, run out in cinemas on 19th of September. Up next, we're talking about something scary. Yay.
This is my husband, Ben.
Patrick Feld. This is my wife, Kira.
This is Agnes.
Aunt has some trouble communicating. You can be a bit insecure.
Nice Vespa.
Yeah, isn't she?
You should try.
Can we?
I won't call the fun police if you don't.
Okay. Io lo so che mi chiami anche da diversi
fusi orari. Ieri siamo stati esagerati. Back before I quit my practice.
You're a lawyer.
Doctor, listen, you have to come and visit.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Done.
It's so quiet around here. Do they even have any neighbors?
Hey, you made it.
Welcome, welcome.
Ta-da!
You are VIP guests.
Just to
remind you, I'm a vegetarian.
Our gift to you.
That is so...
Louise, doctor's orders.
Very good.
We're talking about a scary movie next. It's Movie Squad. Talk to me about Speak No Evil, Tristan. I don't actually want you to talk to me about it, but please talk to me about it.
Sure. Speak No Evil, it's a new thriller starring James McAvoy, and it's produced by Blumhouse Productions, best known for, you know, Paranormal Activity, Insidious, Happy Death Day, the Halloween requel trilogy. And that it was a rebooted sequel.
Right, sorry. Yeah. It's, continue.
I mean, it's as confusing as what the whole trilogy ended up being, so. And they also did Split, the M. Night Shyamalan film.
I know loads of those names. Oh, I always feel out of my depth when you mention horror movies, but I knew loads of those.
Oh, well, there you go. Some of them are very good.
I haven't seen them, but
I
knew the names.
You're a bona fide horror maven.
Okay.
I think you would like, I would recommend Happy Death Day, because that's more of a comedy than a full-on horror
film. Well, and Happy Death Day to you is a time travel film.
That's it. And we were hoping for the sequel as well, the third one in the franchise. But for now, we're talking about Speak No Evil, which is a remake of a very recent Danish film with the same title, directed by Christian Taftrup. And this one is directed by James Watkins, who's a British filmmaker who made films like Eden Lake, which I've not seen, but I heard is very grim, and The Woman in Black, which I have seen with Daniel Radcliffe, which I think was fine. But Simon, I know you haven't seen this remake, but you have recently watched the original, which I have not seen but have heard about, and has some very fervent fans because it's not quite like other horror films.
That's right. And on Tuesday night, I couldn't actually get to the screening of Speak No Evil, and I was at home going, wait. There's another version of this film I could just watch right now, and I did that and was happy to watch it. A really interesting horror film. And Pam, this is where I think you might be intrigued by this franchise, or whatever you want to call it, because it definitely is the realm of horror, but certainly the sort of original is more of a comedy of manners, a very dark comedy of manners, about a couple that meets another couple on holiday. They become friends, they're from different cultures, and then they agree to have another long weekend away together. And it's really about the awkwardness of one couple realizing, oh, we don't actually like these other folks, but we're too polite to say anything.
Okay.
And then how that escalates into violence is quite interesting. So then you've got this American remake, Tristan, which, again, I've not seen, but my understanding is that it plays up the horror of it all, or the more base thrills compared to the social commentary maybe of the original.
Yeah, there's still that kind of the awkwardness of the clash of the two couples. So yeah, it's pretty much the same plot. On a holiday in Italy, an American couple, Ben, played by Scoot McNairy, and who people would know from films like Killing Them Softly and the TV show Halt and Catch Fire, reuniting with his co-star Mackenzie Davis, who people would know from Blade Runner 2049. And their child Agnes, they're actually based in London, even though that they're American. But they're having a holiday in Italy. They make a connection with a British family led by Patty, played by James McAvoy, and Chiara, played by you know how to say
Aisling Franciosi.
Thank you, from The Nightingale, and their son, who does not talk. He is said to have had a birth defect or something, or is not able to talk. So he's very silent and withdrawn. But this couple get on well together, and after the holiday is over, the British family led by James McAvoy, they send a postcard saying, "We live in the West Country. We've got a lovely property there by the countryside. If you ever want to catch up, reunite, hang out, please." And the American couple, they're going through a bit of a rough patch in their marriage. So the dad or the father, played by Scoot McNairy, he's kind of a bit out of work and is looking around for a new job. So he needs a bit of a pick-me-up, and so they agree to reconnect with their holiday friends. But, I mean, it's called Speak No Evil. It's not about a happy time out in the countryside. And as Simon talked about the original film, there is this sense of them trying to be very polite to, like, they find that the sheets are not really washed in their bed. Mackenzie Davis's character is a vegetarian, but you know, James McAvoy's character, he cooks this goose and kind of like it, and
a goose,
and says, like, "This is really lovely. Taste it. Have a bite." And she just goes along with it without wanting to make a fuss, you know. So it's that thing of the kind of the social awkwardness of kind of, you know, trying to go along to get along, and where that will lead you, which is a very kind of terrifying place in both movies, though in different directions. So I know that this is not really your bag, Pam, even though you know, Simon's talking about the kind of the awkward situation the social humor of the film. But I know that people even have a tough time with, like, something like Curb Your Enthusiasm, where you just kind of, like, some people love that and other people are just like, I can't watch this.
Yeah, this is almost like cringe horror.
Cringe horror. Yeah, where you kind of just going, look, I wouldn't, you know, if people are acting weird, you just go, you know, get out right now. Why would you stick around? And that's a little bit what happens here, though I think it's more pronounced and determined in the original film. Look, I have not seen the original film. I had heard about the ending and how, you know, basically the power of the original film, I don't think, is replicated in this remake. I think it's softened a little bit for mainstream audiences, which I guess I expected. But I still enjoyed it. It's kind of like, it's sort of a little bit like a siege thriller in the end. But a lot of it is still funny to me because of James McAvoy's performance. And you were saying, Simon, the kind of like the heightenedness of this American remake. He comes off as a very kind of chummy alpha male kind of guy, but he also looks huge. He looks like he did in Split, like when he turns into the Beast and he gets... So you're just kind of like anticipating this guy is so brawny that something's got to happen that's going to turn a little bit physical and a little bit violent. So look, I actually enjoyed this. I had a good time for what it was, which was a thriller. I think fans of the original will find it a little bit lacking because it doesn't really go to that place, which, I mean, I have not seen it, but you can speak to that a bit more, Simon. And like that, the original has something that a lot of other horror films don't.
Yeah, Pam, that original film is really kind of mocking the idea of, like, just being so passive to the point that you have effectively no survival instinct.
Sure.
And it's sort of, it is I would almost say, a film that is very politically incorrect, and they do have a little bit in the film where they talk about, you know, PC madness. But I think it's quite funny in that respect that the couple in this film have a very specific victim mindset and how they kind of don't fight back over the course of this escalating tension. So I don't really see the I see the point of the if you're going to do a remake, right, 2 years after, and they're both in the English language, effectively, you got to make it different. You know, you have to. I changing the ending. Great, that's a reason to see it. But I almost feel like, well, then that's also defeating the entire point of the original movie. Pam, I don't know. You know, obviously we're talking in circles here, or certainly around, you know, spoilers and things like that. But what is your capacity for that cringe element of horror?
I don't know. I feel like with cringe movies in general, there's wincing that I don't know if I can deal with. I don't know. I definitely don't relish in the idea of feeling embarrassed and feeling overwhelmed by that sort of sensation to be embarrassed on behalf of somebody else. I don't love that. And I think that's I used to not be able to watch The Office, you know? And that's that's definitely not all the way into that, doesn't play all the way into that hand, but sort of nods to that. And I can now, and I can get around it a little bit. I love James McAvoy, so there's a temptation there. I think he's a delight. He's very funny. I find him so wildly charming. I don't know if I've actually watched that many movies of his, but whenever I see him do presses or anything, I'm delighted, and I liked him in Atonement. That's really the only movie I can think of him in off the top of my head, and I know he's been in lots of things, but you know, that's the memorable performance for me. So I don't know about that cringe kind of horror, and I think that if you're adding horror to it as well, and is it gory? Like, is it hard to watch? Does it make you want to look away? Kind of horror? Is it kind of?
Well, I think, from what I gather from the original, it's more conceptually like of you know, people kind of not acting, and that, you know, you could have audience members like screaming at the screen going like, do something. And there's a little bit of that in this film, but it does get into the kind of in the third act in particular, it does ratchet up the gore and the violence, and particularly the sort of like where it all goes between these two couples. But there's also that kind of I think the only really kind of thematic area is the sort of the masculinity, you know, Scoot McNairy's character. You know, when you cast Scoot McNairy in this, like, he is not, he usually plays a lot of kind of downtrodden,
feckless
characters. So, and he's got an issue with his character where he doesn't feel like he's kind of like, you know, manly enough. And you can see that's why he's like responding to the alpha dog energy of James McAvoy, who's kind of just like, you know, it's all about honesty. We should say what we think. We should just do what we feel. That kind of like, you know, reckless abandon. And then as well, that couple, they are more demonstratively physical with each other, whereas the other couple are going through issues. So there's a little bit of kind of social humor there, but it's not really, I think, a strong theme. It really is just an excuse to get to a point where characters are running around in a kind of a countryside version of The Shining or something like that. But I did enjoy it, and it's fun to hear about your thoughts about James McAvoy, because he is very charming in interviews, and he talks about his kind of working class background and the opportunities for that as an actor. But it's fun to see him look, I guess he looks now like Jared Butler. He looks kind of like huge and brawny, but I'm enjoying him in these kind of horror movies like this and Split.
Because he can
hammer
it up. In an enjoyable way.
He's okay. Gnashing on the scenery. Yeah.
Well, I guess Speak No Evil, out in cinemas now if you do want to see it. It's a sunny weekend, so I don't know why you'd be watching horror movies. But look,
it's Friday the 13th, Pam.
Well, that was my next point. So perfect for a bit of scary business. Any other spooky recommendations for Friday the 13th? I like 13. It's my favourite number, so maybe this is a lucky day. But there is something that feels auspicious about a Friday the 13th, of course. Other than Friday the 13th, is there any other movies that you would recommend for that auspicious kind of energy?
Well, we're also heading into October, so yes, there's a lot of horror films coming out. There's a new VHS film. There's the third Terrifier film. We'll be talking about it all, Pam. Don't worry.
Yes, I know.
So you kind of don't want to. You almost want to table some.
Yeah, right.
But maybe go for the cringe horror for Friday the 13th, maybe, to save the real ghoul for next month.
Maybe that's the way to go, Tristan.
All I could think of in my head was 13, which is every mother's nightmare. Is that right?
Oh, is that the movie where they've got
Rachel
the tongue,
Wood.
Yeah, the tongue piercing?
Yeah, oh. I haven't seen that film in a long time, but that was just the first thing that came to mind. When you talk about the number 13, how many films have 13 in the title?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's got a Friday before it, but...
Yeah.
Now, this is a great segue back into the 30. Age verification laws of the government. Yeah.
That's the kind of 13 I want. No spooky 13s. I want 13 going on 30. You've been listening to Movie Squad here at New Sound Alternative, getting across Speak No Evil and Runt, Tristan Fiddler and Simon Morado for another great week of movie yapping.
Fun title, isn't
it? Yeah, movie yapping. Thanks very much.
So there you have it, another great edition of Movie Chat on the airwave, getting a little bit all over the shop with some 13 recommendations. But it would be interesting. I had heard about the original version of Speak No Evil, and I think there was a point where maybe I spoiled it for myself, or I heard what happens at the ending, and I'm not going to spoil it for people listening now. But it's funny that discussion of sometimes when it comes to, you know, people who are not fans of horror, and they're like, why would you, you know, submit yourself to that? Mm-hmm. Why would you? And I guess there's a version of that where I also go like, and particularly if you know what's going to happen, I'm just like, yeah, I don't need to submit myself to that. And you know, for a similar comparison, and one that a film that's been compared, I assume, to the original Speak No Evil, are the two Funny Games movies by Michael Haneke. I've not seen either of them, but like, I'd always had this sense that, you know, Michael Haneke is a very specific type of director, and he made those films to critique screen violence, but in essence, helped influence so many horror films with its with what it did in both the original version and the remake. So that was a thing where I was just like, I know about the original, I don't feel like compelled to see it. But with this remake, I think it was just like James McAvoy. I was like, I'll go check this out. And I was anticipating that would follow the original more closely. But do you feel like you'll catch up with this remake at some point, Simon?
I think I will, because I am curious now. And maybe I'll just skip to the 60-minute mark, to be honest with you. I'm being facetious. But the points you're raising there are really interesting to me. And partly because I've actually been wrestling with them a little bit myself. Mm. Tristan, you know this, but this week I may have recorded an audio commentary for a film. That is, you know, and the argument of the audio commentary that I recorded is very much like, why would you watch this?
Yes.
Like, what's in it for a viewer? What's in it for the artist? Like, what's in it for the filmmakers who are driven to tell the story? And I think that to a degree on that latter question, you know, we don't want to be putting up too many guardrails. Like, why would you tell this story? That's sort of a, I don't really jibe with that with that argument, to use that phrase. But why would someone submit themselves to it? And I totally respect when someone's like, nope, not for me.
Yeah.
Like, I can just tell this isn't going to be my bag. And when we're talking about extremities of human experience, totally.
Yeah.
You know, spare yourself, right? But I think there is value in it. And I think, you know, that's kind of why I'm a bit perplexed, not by why they would remake it.
Yeah.
Or even by why they would change it. But why even... You know, if you used it as a starting off point, change way more.
Yeah.
Because the original film is very specific and maybe even didactic in its way of saying, this is what the film is about. A character almost says the thesis of the movie in the closing scene. And it was an interesting movie to watch. Mm. And I thought, well, that's fascinating. And, you know, you mentioned at the very start of this that we have a predilection maybe for horror or the darker side of cinema. But I like that phrasing, the darker side of cinema, because I think horror films, like horror, gore, whatever you want to call it, is like a texture that is added to all different kinds of stories. So... we cover a lot of horror films, but I think there's a wide variety of what that means. Mm. And I think the original Speak No Evil is a horror film, but it is about something.
Yeah.
And it made me really think, and it made me really consider, you know, the extreme point that the filmmakers were making. So I really liked and I don't know if I even conveyed that, but I really liked Speak No Evil. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
The ending is horrifying. Like, it's true. Like, I don't, you know, it's only the last 10 minutes that are even remotely violent.
Yeah.
But it is an oppressively horrifying movie. But I think it has a perspective and a thing to say, yeah. about cultures and manhood and victims and villains, etc. So that's why I totally get where this remake has its kind of base pleasures, you know, like you say,
yeah.
hey, it's fun. You sit there for 90 minutes, you get to see James McAvoy hamming it up. But I almost wish they had, by your definition, gone even further afield.
Sure.
And made something a bit more unique, perhaps.
Because sometimes it does occur, you know, we take in a movie and it's like 90 minutes, 2 hours, more than that. But, you know, to think of like actually the actual time and all the organization, even to like film something and you go, well, this is, you know, it takes a lot. And then when your end point might be something that's quite, you know, bleak or horrifying. But yeah, I did think about it a bit more and just think, well, even though that film might not be for me, you know, there is something to going, well, what if you show the like, a nightmare situation, or you put people through that, and maybe it is a way of kind of like, yeah, to shock, but also to get people thinking and contemplating things, and then also that, you know, the pleasures of cinema are vast, and sometimes it is great when a filmmaker or a film is challenging in the sense that it does deny you what you expect, or the kind of the base pleasures, or you think, well, I'm watching a horror film, someone's going to get away, or they're going to fight back, or, you know, all this stuff. But that's convention, and, you know, why not turn convention on its head and make you really feel something in a different way? So yeah, I guess it's an interesting case study to look at these two movies, and I guess it has precedent. There are kind of, I think, other versions of where European cinema can go further than American cinema or Hollywood, and Hollywood will go back. And I guess the Vanishing yeah. is the one that comes to mind, where the American remake is often considered a real poor version and robs what is the serious power of the original version of The Vanishing.
Yeah. And Funny Games was an interesting point, and I'll mm-hmm. speak on that briefly, because I've only seen the Michael Haneke version.
Yeah.
And I really like Michael Haneke as a filmmaker. Some of his films I'm not fans of at all. But that Funny Games I really dislike.
Yes.
Because that is a film, unlike Speak No Evil, for example, and some of these other movies, it is actually extremely didactic, and it is like telling you off.
Yes.
And like, it's saying, if you have chosen to watch Funny Games, you're a bad person. And I'm not even disagreeing with this thesis, yeah. but I'm kind of just like, well, this sucks. Like, but it's unique because I think the remake, which I didn't see, but my understanding is that it pretty much fulfills the brief.
Well, from my understanding, it was, he remade it. It's him. Like, he
oh my gosh, you're so right.
So like to think he's given that lesson once and he's like, well, let me do it again.
I completely forgot he directed the remake.
Yeah.
So, but the point being is that I think that it came at a time, you know, the mid-2000s where there was now an appetite in Hollywood for horrors like Saw, Hostel, etc.
Yeah.
So I think The Strangers, you could actually take it to that extreme.
Mm.
But I think we've wound it back a little bit now.
Well, it's a good insight in that we're spending a lot more time digging into the area surrounding Speak No Evil rather than Runt. But, you know, Runt is out in cinemas now and definitely would be something that is, I guess, the complete opposite.
What a double feature.
Speak No Evil. But we look forward to discussing more films. And that's the brilliant joy of Movie Squad and movies, that each week there's going to be, you know, two, maybe more films, but there's going to be a variety of different tones, different genres, different sensory experiences. So we look forward to the next coupling on the next episode of Movie Squad. Thank you all for listening.